The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Jones on his idea sure was wrong. I took old Jones for my personal friend. Don't you see what Jones had done? Now Jones, he hang around me like a hungry hound. Took my woman and he left this town. Now I wonder if anybody in here can tell me if they seen old Jones. Jones, oh Jones, boy, you know you can't last long. Jones, oh Jones, you better bring my woman back home. Got a 4 foot Daniel with me, gonna buy me a Gatlin gun. And when I meet you, Jones, you know it ain't no use to run. I got the Amlings down, you with me, Undertaker too. And here's the studio doctors offering me money for you. I'm going to keep you for myself. I'm going to kill you dead and bury you. Gonna dig you up for fun. I'm going to stand and watch the buzzard pick the meat off your bones. I'm going to take my wet and butcher. Gonna chop you through and through. I'm going to chop you into pieces just big enough for stew on. When I get through, everybody gonna moan. Jones, oh Jones. Jones, oh Jones, boy, you know you can't last long. Jones, oh Jones, you better bring my woman back home. Yes, I had a little gal by the name of Sue. I took her home with me, but the Sue, she wouldn't do. Yes, I had another gal by the name of Minnie. She didn't want one man because she loves her plenty. Yes, I had another gal by the name of May. I took her home with me, but that gal, she wouldn't stay. I got a 4 foot Daniel with me, go buy me a Gatlin gun. And when I meet you, Jones, you know it ain't no use to run. For Jones, he told me that he was my personal pal. Until that son of bum come and stole away my gal. Yes, I'm up and down the town.
Good morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. I'm feeling a little deputy prime minister-ish this morning. First of all, I feel like I don't exist because DPM doesn't exist. But more importantly, I feel like challenging Mr. Dwight Strawn with his celebrating hip-hop in the 50th anniversary of hip-hop by playing what is perhaps one of the first rap songs ever made, well before the birth of hip-hop, birthed by Caribbean and African migrants in the New World, in the East Coast of the U.S., right? We in the Bahamas and in the Caribbean are equally a part of the birth and development of the form called hip-hop over the decades. And I challenge anybody, Blind Blake is one of the first, not just one of the first rappers, but one of the first gangster rappers. You ain't hear what he tell Jones, old Jones, just now? Mm-hmm. You better leave my gal alone. Right. You son of bum.
But my question is, why challenged? Why not just prorogue?
Suspend, just marry the girl and suspend the whole session. It's too late. You think you was Osam. Taking my woman. Anyway, it's great to know that we are equally a part of the world, that we are equally responsible for the development of the things that are most important to the world. And one of those things is hip-hop. Absolutely. Good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning. Good morning. Starfruit.
Yes.
Season.
It is.
Beautiful.
And tangy. Mm-hmm. Nice blend of sour and sweet.
And if you have a juicer, you can juice them, and it tastes just like orange juice, but more delicate.
Great for mimosas, for people who are allowed to drink in the morning. Some of us can't drink until the sun goes down. We know who we are, and we must follow the rules, people. Mr. Palmer, let me go through our Sand Dollar Live reads, and then we get into today's discussion. Again, Thursday the 17th and Friday the 18th of August, Central Bank representatives will be giving out sand dollars at Fresh Market Harbor Bay location. Show your sand dollar-enabled digital wallet at the door and receive $20. Spend $18 or more in sand dollars at the register and get $5 back when you leave the store. This offer is limited to the first 100 customers to show their sand dollar-enabled wallet at each location. One top-up per person, so as many people as possible can experience the Sand Dollar. Mm-hmm. For more details, visit any of the Sand Dollar social media pages or call 302-9880. That's 302-9880. Now for the on-the-clock Sand Dollar trivia giveaway. Every day for the next 2 months, we'll be giving away sand dollars to digital wallet holders. Every week, players can win $30 in sand dollars. To be eligible to win, you must have a digital wallet and answer the trivia question correctly. When you call in, give the producer your name and number. If you answer the question correctly, you'll be transferred back to the producer. Ooh. Give the producer your wallet address again, your digital wallet information, like your custom name. And make sure he has your cell phone number so that I can transfer the funds to your digital wallet when you win. Listeners are restricted to one transfer for the duration of the competition. Again, you can only win once. So here is the first question of the day. When was the Bank of Nassau formed? When was the Bank of Nassau formed? Again, all of our questions are easily Google-able. Mm-hmm. I try to make them as easy as possible. Not just as easy as possible, but as easy to find the answer. If you don't know the answer, as possible. The numbers to call, 323-6232.
So I've heard of the People Penny Savings Bank, but I never heard of the Nassau Bank. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You heard of that?
The Nassau Bank?
Mm-hmm.
I had not heard of the Nassau Bank before doing this research. I had heard of National Suckers Bank, my favorite bank. The fees are all feelings. You have to pay the fees in your feelings. It's a great bank if you could manage your feelings. When was the Bank of Nassau formed? The numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720 for people in the Bahamas but not in New Providence. The text line is powered by BTC. That's 422-GR96, 422-4796. If you're answering by text, remember I need your digital wallet information in the same text as the correct answer. Producer, I see we got a caller on the board. I'm hoping they're calling to answer the question. Quick text, what's happening with the electricity in Seabreeze? It's another morning. The electricity has been off from about 2 a.m. and is still not on at 9 a.m. Why is this a regular occurrence? Because this is beyond load shedding. Dear texter, send me a location more narrow than just Seabreeze. Send me a location more narrow than just Seabreeze. I could put it out on the airwaves, and the teams can attend to that. Thank you for texting. Look here, BPL is all in the papers this morning. Vindicated, Mr. Palmer. That's the word that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
In a small way, I feel vindicated, because for years I've been saying to people publicly over the airwaves that we are in an energy crisis,
mm-hmm.
right? And attempting to compel both consumers, stakeholders, and administrators to acknowledge it's a crisis so that they could shift into crisis mode.
Have they admitted it yet? Have they actually said it? It's a crisis. I mean, for me, you know, personally, my bill's gone up double from what it was last year.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so what is the reason for that, Aaron?
We know what the reason for that is, why your bill has doubled, Mr. Palmer. I'm going to get to that reason right after we take this caller. Good morning, caller. You are on the clock.
Good morning.
Good morning. You calling to answer the trivia question?
Yes, I am.
When was the Bank of Nassau formed?
It was formed in 1889.
Yes, it was. It was formed in 1889. Please, and you gave the producer all of your information?
Yes, Mom, I did.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much. I'll contact you after the show to transfer your funds.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Patma, let me throw out our second question for the day, and then we can get back to why your bill has doubled over a 12-month period. Second question of the day for the on-the-clock Sand Dollar Trivia giveaway. Who is on the Bahamian $100 bill? Who is on the Bahamian $100 bill? Second question for today. Again, numbers to call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. Just quickly, before we get into the discussion, I've got the text back. So this power issue is occurring in Seabreeze Grove. I'm hoping the interested, when I say interested parties, we're all interested in whether our power can be on or not when we get home. That's not the point. Stakeholders at IRCA and at BPL. There's a major issue. Not only are these people power off from 2 a.m. to 9 a.m. with no communication or indication of why it's off, but it goes off frequently, apparently. This is an issue for both IRCA and BPL, and let me include the Ministry of Public Works, who has oversight for BPL and BEC. Their text to the correct answer is 1889. The Bank of Nassau was formed in 1889. And the new question, who is on the Bahamian $100 bill? 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and 242-300-5720. Text line 422-4796. So, Mark, your power bill has increased drastically because the government implemented the fuel
surcharge,
the fuel charge rate increase policy. That's why. The question that comes up next is, why
did they change to this new policy?
Why did they? What's the rationale for shifting from the fuel hedge policy to the fuel charge rate increase policy?
So when did this take place? Because that would be interesting to know. Do you know when that took place?
1 second, producer. Let's check this call.
Okay.
All right. So this happened last year, in I think early in the year, throughout the year, people at BPL kept throwing out hints that we need an increase, we need an increase. Mm-hmm. By October, I think it was, the Prime Minister announced, I think the date may be October 4th, the Prime Minister announced that they're going to implement this new policy. It wasn't until after the Prime Minister made the official announcement that IRCA indicated that they are assessing, they're going to assess the policy request to, right? It had already been
implemented.
And then a month later, IRCA came back and said, yeah, we looked it over, it's fine. But it had already been in place. And so what we need is, I guess, for IRCA to ask the relevant ministries and actors, what is the rationale for shifting policies? What's the reason why you shifted the policy? And we haven't gotten a clear or firm answer to that yet. And I think that's where the discussion lies.
I mean, it just seems so weird. It feels almost like Alice in Wonderland. Everything is upside down. You know, the things that are supposed to, A follows B, B follows A, C follows B, doesn't seem to be happening. It seems to be C, and then A follows B. How can you, that just feels so unsafe, right? It just does feel very unsafe when you can't rely on what would be like a standard operating procedure. Like, you know, I remember when I was living in England, before the winter would come, I would service my boiler, right? So you go ahead and do that, because I didn't do it 1 year and then I had problems in February, March, right?
That's
are we even doing these basic things, you know, standard operating procedures, because it just feels so unsafe when they're not being followed.
More voices are coming to the table. There are a lot of voices in the public domain. one part of me is grateful, right, that people are now speaking. Because for decades, people...
Are you talking about whistleblowers or...
Well, no, not whistleblowers. Because these people aren't speaking in the capacity of a whistleblower per se. For example, the headline in today's Guardian, BPL explains woes at station they plan. BPL explains delayed maintenance on Wärtsilä engines. They had a press conference. Mm-hmm. They went through a whole bunch of information, right? So
in, those sound like the new that sound like the new engines, right? They put in the new generators.
The newly purchased.
Yeah.
The newly purchased engines, because what I briefly heard from the press conference suggests to me that maybe we didn't even get new engines. Maybe. Right? Them talking about the maintenance dynamics. But The Guardian has a wonderful article. You should grab it today. BPL explains woes at Station A plant. It's still not sufficient. Like, now there are too many voices in the public domain on the matter. We still require clarity, because clarity will aid transparency. When I say too many voices, I'm wondering, what is the former Minister of Works talking about? First of all, I have to ask, why do you all keep referring to anybody as Deputy Prime Minister? Why would you refer to him as ex-Deputy Prime Minister? And in the context of this discussion, why wouldn't you refer to him as the former Minister of Public Works? Since he's speaking on matters that pertain to public works, a ministry that he was once responsible for, right? Bannister says, publish report on BPL station. Bannister, why didn't you publish the report on the BPL station while you were the minister? In fact, why didn't you publish a report on the 2018 fire investigation, right? Why didn't you publish that report while you were the sitting Minister of Works?
Good question.
Tell me, is there a report on Blackbeard's Quay, Minister? Since you want to talk, since you want to talk now, what about Blackbeard's Quay? Please, it's time to take the politics out of governance. Here's why. Because there are no penalties for failing politicians. We don't even have a law that says if you left politics and governance with questions unanswered on the table, you can't re-enter frontline politics until those questions are answered. We don't even have penalties like that. Sorry, restrictions like that. It's just madness. When you had the opportunity to speak with authority, you didn't. Why are you speaking now? With what authority do you speak? We're tired of it. There's too many games. There's too much politics in the realm of
And there doesn't
governance.
Seem to be any courage by ministers to actually go against the grain and do something different. Just follow the rule. Well, your little gang or your tribe, you follow the rules of your little tribe, and then when your tribe is not in power, then you come out and talk big, right?
Right, but they have so much courage to go against the grain of the Constitution, right? They have so much courage to go against the grain of the rules of governance, the rules of Parliament, but you don't have enough courage to buck those other people in your party. That is why, leading into the election campaign, I invited candidates to my show to answer a number of questions, including, how will you balance your obligation to the Constitution, your obligation to the people of the Bahamas, your obligation to party, to cabinet, to parliament? How will you balance all of these duties? Right?
And what happened?
Three of them, maybe two showed up, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could see what happened.
Yeah.
We have people telling us, I didn't know I had to disclose. Oh, I didn't know how hard disclosing would be. Oh, I didn't know that I had to submit the letter to the Prime Minister. Oh, I didn't know. Right? We have a cadre of governors that don't even know how to govern themselves in the role of politician, in the role of minister, in the role of MP, in the role of social, political leaders. That's what we have.
Mm-hmm.
With some very simple questions on the table, right? That people who volunteer to govern should be prepared to engage. Now, in 2023, we have politicians telling us that we want too much of them, that we demand too much of them, we demand too much charity of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
When what we're demanding is structural reform, because we have to rely on charity because you refuse to do your job and live up to your legal, ethical, and moral obligations in a position that you volunteered for. Nobody forced it upon you. The beautiful thing is you live in the Bahamas, where any day you could quit your job and go to the Ministry of Tourism or Beaches and Parks and get a job sweeping seaweed off the beach. You don't need to be in a job if you are not prepared to do what is required of you in that job. Dear politicians.
I wonder if they have a job description for like a minister. You know, like when you start a new job, it's like you get a job description which says, you know, these are the objectives, this is how you're going to be judged on, you know, for the first 3 months. Do they have right. such a thing? Because that would be interesting to actually know what the key objectives were for each of those people.
Mr. Newry,
if they don't exist, how will you know everyone's going to be different, right?
Yeah.
We don't have one set of standards that everyone could follow, and then we can actually judge them, right?
Make assessments.
But that would be accountability, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't like wearing that hat.
That's the A word.
Look here, they don't like wearing that hat. Honesty, mm-hmm. accountability, and transparency. They say it mess up their hair.
Because whenever I've been in a job, I've always been judged according to my job description, right? When you go for your review, they're going to look, oh, did you achieve that? Blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. What can you do better, et cetera? But I don't think that process ever happens, is it?
Absolutely.
No.
So listen, we've got a couple of texts here, but I need your sand dollar wallet information before it's a valid, correct answer. I got a text, Ms. Green, I wish we could have hold these politicians accountable like how the rebel leaders are holding their president somewhere in Africa accountable and told him if he does not account, he will face the firing squad. Dear texter, I wish that our politicians would govern in a way that doesn't leave people feeling like this. We wish that they would govern in a way that they acknowledge that they are also subject to the laws that govern the Bahamas. You don't just make mm-hmm. the laws, you are also subjected to them, and not only when it's at your convenience. Again, the second question of the day, who is on the Bahamian $100 bill? Dear texters, I need you to send your wallet information with the text. BPL Seabreeze Grove is experiencing power issues. Now, Mr. Palmer, I tell you what I wanted to talk about this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Some person shared a notice published by, I presume, the owner of a hair braiding establishment, right? I don't know if it's a hair braiding shop or if it's a hair braiding business where people are on the beach
mm-hmm.
and they braid on the beach. But the notice basically said that our braiders are primarily Creole speaking. And please don't be uncomfortable. I can pull it up right now. It's somewhere on Facebook. But please don't be uncomfortable with them speaking in their native or first language, which is Creole, while they're braiding here. In fact, I'm going to read the notice. I found it. Kindly note that the dominant language spoken by our braiders is Haitian Creole. We are professionals, and it is not our intention to offend anyone when we speak. We understand that you may not know or understand the language. However, anything said is not directed towards you. If you are uncomfortable or may feel as though it's too much talking over your head, you have the rights to express yourself. Our aim is to provide the best service. We value and appreciate you. Respectfully, thank you in advance for your support and understanding. All right, so I saw that notice, and I was following the conversation that followed under it, and there were differing views, right?
This was in social media?
Or? Yeah, yes, this is in social media. There were differing views. One set of views was, well, y'all in the Bahamas, and we speak English in the Bahamas, and the tourists speak English, so it's disrespectful of you to be speaking in another language, even if you're not speaking directly to the tourists. And the other view is that it's their first language. It's their first language, right? And you shouldn't restrict people from speaking their first language, especially if language is not a priority or major element of the job, right? And two, they work in. They should be allowed to speak to each other in what language is comfortable. And once they're not speaking to the customer in a language the customer can understand, like you're negotiating a price in a foreign language, that should be fine, right? And those are the two differing views. And it turned into quite a
Why would you have to put that notice anyway? You know, when my wife goes to a nail bar, like in the States, they tend to be usually run by Vietnamese women or from somewhere in the East, right?
Yeah.
And I've never seen a notice that says, excuse us while we speak Vietnamese to each other. You kind of almost expect it, right?
Right. And so,
so my question is, why would you even need to put that, unless some people have been complaining, you think?
I imagine that tourists have complained, and maybe Bahamians have complained about it. Maybe Bahamians have complained on behalf of the tourists, right, about it. And I think there's the tension that arises with the fear and frustration that migrants are displacing Bahamians in economic spaces, right? So you sort of understand that. But I wanted to throw some questions on the table and then juxtapose them to your discussion this morning about free speech, right, that we sort of haven't had yet. I want to throw out the questions. Are people allowed to speak their first language in the workplace, right? When it's not direct, you know, in the workplace, period, when it's not directly related to service provision, right? So I'm not speaking to a customer, right?
I would imagine that would depend on each case, right? So whoever the business owner would set their own standards, they would have their own rules. So, and depending where you were, if you were providing a government service, that may be very different if you're working in, you know, in a butcher's or, you know.
Right.
So, they, you know, so I think every businessman would set their own criteria.
Well, every workplace would have a policy dictated by the nature of the work.
Possibly.
In the workplace, right?
But also politically, it could be, you know, the owner's political view.
Right, it could be that as well.
As long as it's not unconstitutional.
But why?
I suppose you could have any rules you want.
Right, right? Why would you hire a number of migrants, like, right? Why would you hire a group of migrants and then tell them they can't speak in their first language to each other? Now, if it's a job of a high security nature, then you would have vetted these people, right? It's A, likely that migrants wouldn't be working in that space. B, those migrants or anybody in that space would be vetted. So there's a layer of oversight in terms of risk, right, of exposure to information. But we're talking about hair braiding, where hair braiders, they're not entertainers. They're not required to tell their customer a story to keep them entertained. Now, a successful hair braider may say, hey, the trick to my success is that I engage the customer, right? That I talk to them, I'm comfortable. But is it warranted restricting people speaking in their first language on a job site, and specifically for the job of hair braiding? And would it be fair of me to say that those concerns, those people who think it shouldn't be done, those ideas are rooted in xenophobia,
some sort of fear.
A fear or frustration separate from xenophobia, right? Separate from that.
But, you know, the customer always has a choice. They can go to a, you know, English-speaking hair braider if they want to.
Right.
They can walk away. Just like, you know, in the States, you saw the situation where people, you know, in various communities, you know, they refused to serve people in different communities. And that, you know, that was a kind of a similar thing, right?
Yeah. So,
don't go there, go somewhere else.
Right, but these are English-speaking. The hair braiders are English-speaking, so it's not a matter of we can't communicate at all.
Right.
I'm not sure what you're going to do to my hair. I'm not sure how much money I'm going to pay at the end of this experience. I don't think that's what's happening. There's just a frustration that the people who we've identified as migrants because they're first, like, they speak another language.
I think you're right. It's something underneath, something else driving it.
Yeah.
It's not just the language, it's something else, right?
Right.
And I think you touched on it. Xenophobia, fear.
So I also want to throw it out to the audience, right? Like, what do you think? Do you think that people should be allowed to speak their first language on the job site? A. B. Do you think that migrants should be allowed to speak their first language on the work site? But three, should Bahamians be allowed, permitted, or encouraged to speak their first language on the work site? Now, C isn't a trick question either, because we learned over the last few weeks that what we speak is Bahamian Common English. And most children grow up in a household where Bahamian Common English, rather than British Common English, is the first language. And I could say I'm someone who grew up in a household with Bahamian Common English, but was quickly socialized into making British Common English my standard, right? So I've experienced it personally. And so the three questions, should people be able to speak their first language on the job? Should migrants be able to speak their first language on the job? And should Bahamians be enabled or encouraged to speak their first language on the job?
Well, let's see what people say.
And
I don't know if it's such a big topic that people just ring in.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Maybe it doesn't stir the emotion like some other topics do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The fourth question I guess I'll throw out is this a human rights issue? Is this a matter of free speech? And are we breaching people's rights by telling them, even if you are a properly documented migrant in a country, there are spaces where you are not allowed to speak your first language? And is it fair to say to an employee, I will permit you, in fact, I will encourage you to speak your first language when it is beneficial or convenient to me? Thus, I can engage more customers because I have employees that are bilingual or multilingual. But when it makes me uncomfortable or is inconvenient to me, I expect you to never speak your first language. Maybe it's the term first language, right? That's confusing. But first language is the language you first learn in your household, right? It's the first thing you learn to speak. And should people be allowed to speak that to each other if they share a same first language? And then I guess we also throw in, are there any reasons why you would be justified in restricting someone's first language? So I got a text here. Good morning, madam and guests. This is not a prank text. It's not a prank. The text is correct. Also, they are loud in their speech. shouting no matter how close their proximity to each other, especially on the phone. How can we allow any workforce in our country to be 100% foreign? Bahamians should be employed also and should be allowed to correct the perception that Creole is our native language. That is the point. That is the point. Our native way of life, they are sending the message that it's our native language. So I want to delve into this text, right? No text. I know it's not a prank. We can engage this respectfully, right? Why do you assume that because Bahamian Common English or British Common English is, or Standard English is not their first language, that they're not Bahamian, or that they're not properly documented, in the, that they don't have status, right? And that's the first thing. There are lots of Bahamians, you would never know that they're multilingual, they're bilingual, and you wouldn't know what their first language is either. We got a large Greek community here.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you would have the same reaction if you substituted Greek or Tagalog, which is Filipino. We have a lot of Filipinos here working in the health service, you know, in the hospitals. If you substituted Tagalog for Haitian Creole, would that have a different reaction?
And also,
I just have an instinct that could, you know, have a different reaction,
right?
A less polarizing one.
Right, but I think it also depends on the space that they're working in, right? So in the hospital, I may be more sensitive to nurses and staff speaking in a different language while attending to me, right? I may have an issue with that. I may be uncomfortable. Mind you, I'm presenting at the hospital. I'm already in an uncomfortable state. I'm already in a state of uncertainty. And then we're talking about PMH people.
So using the same example.
Right.
If those people who are looking after you were speaking Haitian Creole rather than Tagalog, would you have a different reaction?
Right. No, it would be the same.
It
would be the same.
But I wonder how that would be for your average Bahamian.
Right.
Because I know there's an issue.
Producer, let's check this call. Mm-hmm. And I think I've got a texter that included their text information. But let's take this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hey, Aaron.
Hey, good morning.
And good morning, Palmer.
Yeah, morning. Good morning, sir.
Yeah. Aaron, our constitution is written in English. English is a standard language.
Yes, okay, English. But pause. It is written in British standard English, but Bahamian standard English is our language.
You're talking about dialect.
No, I'm not talking about dialect. I'm talking about a Creole.
Yeah, Creole, we call it, right, yeah. But we do have a Creole, yeah, we do have a dialect.
And that's why I ask... That's why I ask, can you restrict Bahamians from speaking their first language, or should you restrict them from speaking their first language in the workplace?
No. Remember, they tried to...
Because if we did that, Ingram couldn't be prime minister, and Minnis couldn't be prime minister.
Yeah, why you got to go, Lord? I forgot to try that, you know, but that didn't work. I think before you become a citizen of the Bahamas, you should know the English.
Yeah.
You should know national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should be civics.
So on.
Yeah.
You should know what Torekli mean.
And what is your contribution to my country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't just come here to live on my social service.
Absolutely.
If that's the case, then you don't need a citizenship.
I got you.
We need to upgrade that.
Yeah. But why do you assume? I'm not saying that these people only speak Haitian Creole. They are bilingual. They speak both English and Haitian Creole, and they're probably trilingual. Listen. They probably speak three languages. They're probably proficient in English, fluent in Haitian Creole.
And Spanish. Haitian, not Haitian, speak Spanish.
Right. Now, is there a fear that we are being displaced by more suitable candidates for a tourism space? Because that's a real issue that we need to look at. How do we build capacity in tourism? We become multilingual so that we can engage various language speakers in the same way that we engage English speakers.
I take you to one greatest prime minister of Obama's speech, the Lyndon Penland.
Mm-hmm.
The Lyndon Penland, when his many members looking at the future of tourism and foreign growth,
mm-hmm.
he said we must know a second language.
Yeah.
Bahamians must know a second language.
Yeah.
Or French or Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to compete globally. If you look at global business, what is the most popular language we communicate in business? Can you tell me?
Right now, it's...
I would say English.
It's English.
No, globally. Yeah, English is one, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, but English is one, but what is the second one?
Spanish?
Spanish, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Take a guess, yeah.
I think it's Spanish. Yeah, it's Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you go straight into the European, French is becoming a popular base to communicate with a business.
Yeah.
Of course, China's creeping in. Because when you go to Chinese trade and water.
Well, that's another thing. China has 1.5 billion people closing
right.
in on two. So we got a lot of Mandarin and Cantonese speakers in the world.
And 1.3 billion Indians.
Time.
And we got
China wanted to put signs up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they come to our country,
yeah.
some of them didn't speak the language. So these are the things going to be developed. We must look at for the future.
And so here's my position on it. I don't say we shouldn't discriminate against people because we feel disadvantaged.
No.
Like, how do you justify discriminating against a child that is Bahamian, born in the Bahamas, no question of status or legality, two Haitian descent parents who have taken it upon themselves to ensure that their child is fluent in their first language, which would maybe Creole, English, second language, French, third language, and maybe another. How do you say to them, did you take over my job? When go on.
There's a correction here, though. The Haitian fluent language is French. Creole is broken.
No. Fluent means that you're proficient in it.
You got to be fluent in Creole.
Yeah, man. Because it's the first language.
I mean, you want to speak in your backyard, but what are you talking about? I mean, you're talking about communicating globally. It's Haitian. Haiti, they communicate and globally. Remember, Haitian University.
I can speak to that, actually, because I've been to Haiti, and the national language is Haitian Creole, because only French is only spoken by the elites. So these are people that have had a private education. So privately educated Haitians
right.
speak French, but publicly educated Haitians only speak Haitian Creole. And so you'll find that, you know, depending on what class
okay.
they come from, will determine how many languages they speak.
Look here, Pumpkin, before I let you go, you could imagine I go to Haiti and I go to try find something to smoke and I go in the people them village and say, puis-je avoir un mauvais herbe? You could imagine if I do that? It could be problems. Just like being in Nassau and going into the camp or the place there. I don't know where it is. I have no idea what I'm talking about. And saying, may I have one weed, please, sir? May I try your weed, please, sir? It ain't going to wake Pumpkin either.
The biggest problem, you're sitting down, and this happened, young lady, she's sitting down, two Haitians was talking about her
mm-hmm.
in Creole, and she didn't know she speaks the language.
Mm-hmm.
And when
yeah.
she let them finish, she tell them off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is very insulting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
You're looking at me, it happened to me too, and you're talking Creole.
Yes. You know Bahamians, you know what Bahamians do? Some Bahamians, not all Bahamians, they presume that the person is Haitian, so they don't speak English, and then they talk about them badly in English.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, the person know exactly what they're saying, but they just smile and say, yes, mommy, because they're humble people. Anyway,
yeah.
I got to go Pumpkin Eater.
All right, have a good day.
Thank you. We got to read through some texts.
He did make a very good point about,
yeah.
you know, that civic thing, because, the presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, and he's
mm-hmm.
actually advocating that if he becomes president, he's going to give, before you vote, you have to pass a civics test. He's saying for the American before, when they get 18 and they get the voting rights, they have to do what an immigrant comes into and
explain
on, so, the cost.
No. As a citizen of Rwanda, when I turn 18, before I am eligible to vote, I have to take a test?
Yeah, that's what he's suggesting.
See,
because,
you know, no,
so
no.
So this is interesting.
No, no. I mean, it is interesting, but no, no. Go on.
So he's interesting because he's saying that, you know, the average American is like hating themselves and they don't understand their history and culture. And you see that when they ask people about, you know, history that we know about the States. They have no idea.
Yeah.
And so he's saying that, you know, in order to make people feel proud about their country, teach them some civics before they get that right to vote.
So yeah, no, no, yeah, right. You can't restrict my right to vote. I don't have to be smart to vote. I don't have to be able to read to vote. I don't have to be able to count to vote. I'm a citizen. I get to vote. That's it. Mm-hmm. You can't, oh, I don't like that, dear Prime Minister. I don't know if it's too late because I know you prorogued the thing and thing, right? But is it too late to, like, take back the honor? I'm just asking.
Which honor?
They honored Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, in the national honors this year.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it would be inappropriate for the king to honor Kagame in our honors. Producer, I see we got a call on the line there. I want to get to the text. We have an answer for the second question of the day. Who is on the $100 bill? It is Arthur D. Hanna. Arthur D. Hanna. That on this other note, good morning to the Hanna Hasty Tynes family. Producer, let's take that call.
We don't call it a Hanna, we call it a Blue Marlin, right?
No, we call it a Hanna now.
We call it a Hanna.
They call Hannas now.
They are.
Rob Quelly, Judah the Lion, Twin Them, Gambino the God, D the Entertainer, Vividly Val, Shadfa. We're going to need some new tracks. We don't call it Blue Marlins no more. We call it Hannas. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Ms. Green. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How you do?
I'm good, man. I get a good morning to your guests also. I have one or two things I want to say.
Yes, sir.
Firstly, I hear a lot of people that say Haitian Creole.
Uh-huh.
Is there another Creole?
Yes, there are many other Creoles.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there are lots of other Creoles.
That's why there's Haitian Creole.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second thing, you read something about the hair braiders.
Yes.
Speaking in Creole.
So the notice was posted by the owner of a hair braiding establishment for the customers to say, hey, we know that some of y'all may be uncomfortable with the idea that our braiders are speaking another language to each other while they're working. They say most of our braiders speak Haitian Creole, and while they're working, they speak to each other in that language. We hope that it doesn't offend you, and we hope that it doesn't make you uncomfortable, because we are here to serve you. That's basically what the notice say.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's their language. So,
yeah.
You know, but what I'm saying, they have that same problem, or maybe even bigger problem, in the straw market.
Okay.
I had my cousins came down here. My cousins are Bahamians, but they now live in the States over 30 years and things.
Okay.
Right? And we went to the straw market for them to get some souvenirs.
Yeah.
And the first, and I'm not exaggerating, at least the first 5 to 6 stores we went to, the people were either Haitians or Jamaicans.
All right.
In the straw market today.
Right.
So and now my last thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to be a public bus driver one time.
Okay.
I picked up some students from Aaron Bailey by the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down and picked up some students from C.I. Gibson further down. You know, both of them on the marathon run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And first time I ever hear young girls talking in Creole.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, they used to hide it one time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They talking in Creole.
Yeah.
And the girls from R&B laughing.
Yeah.
Right? While they talking in Creole. But they didn't know what them girls had planned for them. Then they went around on Collins Avenue by the tiny shop.
Yeah.
One of those girls walked to the back of my bus.
Uh-huh.
And when she slapped that girl from R&B, they told she to shoot her with a gun.
That's how hard
it
was.
And I hard
up. Yeah. Oh,
and the other girls, and I had the side of the bus lying off by the windows. So whoever tried to come out, couldn't get out.
Thank you. Listen.
And I laughed because I told them, I said, you see how important it is, you're talking about Asians, to learn the language?
Yeah.
There's plotting on your from. They come on the bus, there's plotting on that girl didn't realize it.
Right. And see, I love this example that you've read. I don't love it, right? Because, but I appreciate it, and I appreciate you raising it and say thank you, because I think it's a difficult balance. I don't think you can restrict someone from using their first language. I want to draw an illustration. Remember when the boy say, "Hey, Aaron, I want to show you this boat. because they know I was a Bahamian, you know, gal at heart, and I love boat. He's like, Aaron, come here, let me show you this boat. And then I did get on the boat, and the boat starts sailing, and I end up in the Bahamas. And when I run hard, he said, but you say you like boat. I bring you the boat line, right? And the first thing he say is, y'all stop talking to each other in your first language. In fact, they whip the first language out of us. They took it, they snatched it from us, because that is how essential your first language is to who you are, right?
That's deep.
Now, I want to say that the issues raised are things that need to be considered. They're not thrown off the table. But the response is not to take away people's rights and not the most fundamental of rights, especially when the solution can leave you in an advantageous position. As opposed to restricting everyone in the Bahamas to speaking English only, why don't we build our capacity as tourism stakeholders and mandate, right, or incentivize parents and children learning multiple languages? Right, that's what I say. Let's incentivize it. Producer, we going to a break or we ending the show? We got to end the show. Guys, I'm so sorry that we didn't get to go to a break. Producer, let me read these texts very quickly, if you don't mind. Good morning, Aaron. At my job, I witness individuals going through job interviews with a translator, then being hired, plus can't understand a simple instruction, like, I need you to move your bike, please. Plus, when they sometimes talk, they speak English, but then when you are around, they speak in their language. How am I to know if they aren't plotting about me or my people? Ah, boy. Because they are representing Bahamian tourism in the Bahamas, that's why they should speak English, the texter is saying. Sorry, ma'am, take that out of your head. The humble ones no longer come here. Dear texter, we got to explore that some more. I can't just leave that there. Because when you look at those groupings of people, countries, nationalities, that those people are excelling in the world, right? It's because they are able to balance humility, ego, and belief in self and the collective that they are connected to through their first language. I want to say good morning to my Nigerian cousins. Anyway, we're all out of time. Thank you for your patience, producer. We got two winners for the text today. And coming up next is C.A. Newry with Guardian Radio AM. Have a great day, Bahamas. Sorry I couldn't get through all your texts.
Vaccines are essential for new and returning students. Vaccines also protect fellow students, teachers, staff, and other members of the community from serious illnesses and even death. As you begin your back-to-school preparations, ensure that your children's vaccinations are up to date. All vaccines are available at all public health clinics.
This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and USAID.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.